You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. On Mysteries and Monsters today, I'm delighted to be joined by the notable Canadian psychic and paranormal investigator, Jim Hunt. Jim's career has spanned decades and has seen him travel around the world in the search for answers to the questions about the reality of life after death. We discuss his history in the paranormal, his work on the Canadian TV show Knock Knock Ghost, which is available on Prime, as well as some haunted locations from the eastern side of Canada, notably in Montreal. It's always good to hear about haunted locations that aren't discussed as much as others, and Jim is in great form throughout our conversation. Before we get there, as always, you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up for patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters for $4 a month. Ad-free episodes, early releases. This month the Patreons are getting a special Q&A where they've asked me some deep dive questions about paranormal and cryptids and other such things. And there's also an upcoming episode of Paranormal Archive where I'm discussing some lost cases from the newspaper archives from around the world. A big thank you to my latest Patreon, Brandon. Welcome to the team, Brandon. As always, you can find Mysteries and Monsters across all social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you can subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also find our website, mysteriesandmonsters.com, where you'll also be able to find our Mysteries and Monsters merchandise. As always, a big thank you to my brother Dean Bestel for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr from the Ghost Story Guys, and Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange Network. Now, join me as we travel to Canada to go on the search for spirits in the company of the marvellous Jim Hunt. Today, I am delighted to be joined by Canadian psychic medium, Jim Hunt. Connecting with his sixth sense at an early age, Jim has constantly looked to solve problems in unconventional ways. A deeply appreciated stint on the Canadian TV show Knock Knock Ghost raised his profile, and he has travelled the world searching for answers to some of the biggest questions about what happens when we die. Jim, I am delighted to welcome you to Mysteries and Monsters. How are we?
I'm very good, thank you, and I'm loving this. I just thank you from across the pond, one of my favourite places to be.
Oh, likewise. I think this is a mutual appreciation of each other's home country.
I think that's the way it's going to be, Paul. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Jim, I'm always interested when I speak to people such as yourself, because I think it's very interesting for, especially when we live in such a haunted country as the UK, I think often we suspect and incorrectly assume that everywhere is like this. And I think for us Brits, Canada's one of our closest cousins in the world stage. And the more I've done this show, the more I've been surprised to find that it seems that Canada has only recently started to sort of make peace with its paranormal history. And listening to you interviewed and some of the discussions you've had on other shows, it seems that the realization that you were a little bit different as a child kind of made you sort of regress to protect yourself.
Oh, wow. You have been listening. Thank you. I was punished, beaten to submission by the Catholic Church in Quebec, Canada, in Montreal, for many reasons, because I was the sign of the devil in so many different ways. The expression of being able to share what we have, because I think what I was able to do in seeing the dead, not as good at the beginning of my experiences, it was more aura colors around people that I was able to differentiate how the person's personality was going to be. But the way that I interacted with people and was always in a protective mode, because as soon as you mentioned ghosts, the only thing that they went back to was Ebenezer Scrooge on the TV show that was the original one, black and white.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that they would point to. When in my own neighborhood, there were so many haunted homes of people with in sad situations of murder, suicides, deaths, a lot of homeless people back then in the day in '60s, that you would just see their spirits just sitting and floating around our streets of Lachine in Montreal. And then to say to somebody, oh, look at that guy. What's he doing? And everyone would look at you and go, what guy? What are you talking about? And then you started to learn that, am I crazy? Am I real? Because I've lost my own family to this, not believing and saying that I'm taking advantage of people's feelings and that I'm a great profiler and not a psychic whatsoever. And very horrible things said to me. And so I shut it off until I was basically 19.
Mm.
And from then on, I've never shut up about it. And that's where I am here today, being able to do the podcast, got invited to do the TV show. I've been invited to so many different programs to be to come on, to go into a haunted home or an active home or an old church or some land that could be haunted. And I love going there to try and sleuth and figure it out and help people. That's what I love doing now.
Mm. Do you think it's surprising, as I touched on in my preamble there, Jim, is it surprising when you meet people from outside of Canada who seem to be taken aback about how sort of repressed it has been for the paranormal in Canada? Because I've spoken to other people, and a lot of people, it seems that 60s, 70s, anybody that kind of dabbled in the paranormal, be it psychics or the investigations of haunted locations, it was very much a fringe kind of pursuit, and everybody seemed to be sort of ostracized and pushed out. And I think, was that more to do with which particular province you found yourselves in, or do you think that that was something that covered all of Canadian society at that period of time?
Well, it's funny, out west, the farmer side of things, they were more grounded and accepting of the spiritual world because they would ask to have their property protected. And it was almost like a native side of them that, or Aboriginal side of them that would be requesting that. Growing up in the city of Montreal, anything to do with hauntings or a ghost world or exploring certain things, you were shunned. You were asked to leave the city, basically. And part of the reason, because I don't follow any form of Catholicism, and partially that is the reason, but mostly because I have a hard time with it. There was a church on every corner.
Hmm.
And if you were not seen by a priest doing the sign of the cross as you cross the street or pass a church, you were condemned the next day when you went into the confessional. And we saw you. You didn't do anything. You were just laughing and playing with your sisters as you were walking by the church. You did not show the respect that you should have. You have 50 Hail Marys and blah, blah, blah. So the church had a lot of control over what was said and done in Montreal in those years on the spiritual realm. Now they have nothing. They cannot say anything. And they're not repressing us, and they're not holding us back anymore, which is great. But
yeah,
That's true. It was held back in the 60s, 70s. Early 80s, it started to wake up a little bit. And by the time 98 came, there was no stopping us. And there are some amazing psychics in Montreal. Amazing psychics.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting aspect of it at all. And I would imagine as well for you, because I know you've said that your mother had some psychic abilities and also your grandmother as well. So I would imagine it was that kind of situation where you would have these conversations at home and basically just had to hold everything in until you got to a certain age where you just thought, to hell with it, literally.
It, and that's very true, Paul. But part of the problem was, is if I wanted to get an explanation over something, and it was almost like it was whispered, and they would not carry you. They would ask you to come and talk in the basement for some strange reason in case the world would hear. And that's the old school way. And I remember saying that. And my mom would just say, try and hold your questions until you get older so you understand. Now, this is a child of 5, 6, and 7 who was watching my mom have people come in for tea and her giving them readings.
Mm.
But I wasn't allowed to say that or talk about it because if somebody like a mayor of a certain city would knock on our door and they would come and see lonely old Pauline, and they would just, why would somebody of such importance come and see my mother, right?
Mm.
So everything was always hush hush. And it was crazy because he just wanted to know if he was going to win the election.
So it's kind of like a psychic speakeasy then.
Exactly. It was crazy. It was insane. And it's funny. My father, as hard-nosed as he was, and, the Irish side of him, I guess, he accepted it. He didn't punish me for it. He didn't punish my mom or anybody else in the family. He just looked at it and just said, man, he had 9 lives because he went from tuberculosis to alcoholism to sobriety back. Like, he had a tough life, this man. Mm. And he accepted us for who we were. It's just too bad he didn't accept himself for who he was, which was an amazing man.
Yeah. Yeah. Often we can appreciate others more than we do ourselves. And often that can drive us to make choices. And I think a lot of us understand that kind of situation, Jim, that often we don't see the benefit of ourselves in the society and the family situation we find ourselves in often.
Yeah, because we end up being like monkeys. Hear no evil, speak no evil, say no evil.
Yeah. Would you say, because I know you kind of say that you were around 5 years old when you began to realize that you could see things and different things. And I know that you've mentioned that you had a near-death experience as a child. I believe you had a drowning incident.
A drowning for me, yes.
Were you connecting before that happened, or do you think that was the kind of catalyst that unleashed your sort of acceptance to the real world that you could see?
I can tell you, I think that it was before that, and it was Jim Hunt the introvert at that young age. I was not hanging around playing with other kids. I stayed in my own sandbox and played with my own toys and watched others. I was an observer. So you can see, quite frankly, where the persona of being a profiler would come to truth. But to sit there at a parkside at a young age and look at the colors around people and go, he's not doing very well, he's not healthy. And that's a 1.5-year-old to know that a year later, this poor boy was going to die of cancer, which I never even understood. But I just remember the child. I remember the anguish that the parents were going through. And I was just going, my God, he just went, this little baby went to the light. He's not going to be here anymore. And I knew that. But the anguish that you saw the parents go through, and I wanted to be able to say to the parents, he was okay. But how could a 5-year-old put that to an adult? They would never have listened. I would have been beaten, I think. But those are the things that started with me then. And to see dead people in my own sandbox was amazing. So that helped.
Yeah, I can imagine. I suppose as well, as you grew and went through as old, often many of us find challenges as teenagers for a variety of reasons, Jim. When you get to a certain point when you think, no, this is who I am, this is who I want to be, often people will reach out or sort of gravitate to a scene or people around you. Did you, at that age when you'd kind of gone through school and everything and you were coming up to your sort of late teens, early 20s, did you kind of sort of propel yourself into a different circle of people to tune your abilities or to learn more about what you could actually do?
It was scary, Paul, because there was one woman that was able to help me. She was a friend of my mother's who was rebellious, I guess, in a way. In the years that we grew up, and she was extremely intuitive, and Elizabeth was her name, and she would say things that she saw me do or see, and she says, you did see that man, didn't you? Or you did see that ghost, didn't you? And I would go and look at her and go, yes, I did. And she would put her finger up to her lips and just, we'll talk about it another day. And she's the one who helped me learn to express myself in a very monotone way that I was able to get educated in the spiritual world slowly, but very, very well. Like there was not any scary shit happening to me. Sorry, I'm swearing here a little bit, but I wasn't afraid of the dead. I was more afraid of the living. And the dead were giving me answers as to why they were, their niece or their father or their mother were so mean or unhappy or whatever the case may be. And I knew to stay away from people because the ghosts were giving me the information to stay away, but they were teaching me at the same time. And Elizabeth, she taught me to be in control, to see things, to look at things, to invite things in, and to understand the difference between the dark and the light, which I never knew as a preteen until I was 19. And then I started to understand the behavior of the good, the bad, and the dangerous.
Yeah. Was it difficult, I suppose? Often I find it very interesting that there's sometimes a presumption from some people, Jim, that this is not like something you can just turn off. Is it often the case that when you're coming to grips with what's going on and what's happening and what you can see and feel and appreciate around you, did there come a point where you were able to get to that? Because I can often imagine that at first this can be quite overwhelming if you're having that problem of being able to, or rather unable to, tune out from everything that you're seeing. Because often I suspect that you could go to a new location or meet new people and there would just be all this other noise going on around that only you could kind of tune into.
Wow. I love the questions, by the way. I just sit in a little bit of silence here trying to give you the right answers to some of this. My God. How I learned things was the spirit world would over inundate or throw so much at you that I didn't know if I was coming and going for a very long time in my life, where my silence was kept silent. I was introverted in that way because I was afraid to speak out with everything that I felt and I saw and engaged with. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it was like having an angelic type spirit take my hand and just say, you can tell them to wait a minute. You can tell them that you don't know the answer. You can tell them that they each have to take a turn. And he also, it was a he, who warned me and just said, this will never turn off. You can't turn this off. This is something that will be a part of you for the rest of your life. And you have to understand that you have to learn to cope with this and you will do great, Jim. And when those things came out, I automatically just said, hey, everyone, back off. I need a break.
Mm.
And it didn't go silent, but it was mumbling like, who the hell does he think he is? I was getting all of those little things. He's a little bit cocky, isn't he? And whatever. But they went away. It was like the crazies of the spirit world who were trying to desperately talk to me because I can see them and want me to get an answer out to their aunt or to their uncle, who I have no clue who they are, because they could be at the other end of Canada or the other end of the lake or somewhere. And I'm saying, I'm sorry, I don't know who we're talking about. You will, because you'll meet them one day. And I'm going, well, I don't know about that. But when it happens, please come in and I'll help you. So it's almost like me advising the dead that I didn't have all the answers to give to the living either.
Mm.
And they sort of accepted that of me and let it be. So when I'm in a situation where I'm doing a session, I'm getting the good come out and give me answers. I do use the darker energy to get answers quicker, but they always come out with a substitute of, well, I can give you the answer that she is going to get pregnant, but I'll give you the answer that she's going to have twins and she's not going to be able to handle it. That kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I can go to the white light and just say, you know what? She's going to have twins. Good for her.
Yeah, absolutely. As with anything, it's portion control, Jim.
It is portion control. And it can be overwhelming even to this day. COVID has really hurt my psyche in a lot of ways because of the devastation that we've been going through and the earmarks of people just drained and fed up and want to have a new, have their lives back. And I don't know about you, but our lives are going to be different for the rest of our being on here because of COVID. And we're going to exist in a completely different way now, not in a bad way. We're just going to mosey along our business, but just try and figure out how we can protect ourselves easier now.
Mm. It is a very interesting aspect, touching on
you know, everything that we're all going through right now and have been for the last 2 years almost.
Mm-hmm.
I've often found it because, as I've mentioned, I've a deep interest in the paranormal, especially in the history of the paranormal.
Yes.
And obviously for me, I've been quite interested looking at this, not in a mawkish or ghoulish sense. But
oh, I can tell. I can really tell. It's awesome.
It's very interesting for me because obviously we're looking at the parallels of the last great pandemic, which was the Spanish flu, which occurred obviously, you know, just over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And that kind of coincided with the massive boom, especially here in the UK, in spiritualism, Jim, which I think was coupled with the massive loss of life that British servicemen and Europeans went through because of the First World War. And obviously it affected...
I respect every single one of them, and I feel so sorry for the Brits. I do.
Yeah. Horror. But it obviously affected a lot of people in the Commonwealth, you know, the Canada and Australia as well, because obviously we were all fighting under the banner of the King at the time.
Yes.
I've often been quite interested in looking at that period of time and thinking, well, how are we going to move on over the next couple of years? Because obviously there are hundreds and thousands of people around the world that have been taken far too soon for a variety of reasons. And I'm very interested to see, when I speak with anybody involved in the paranormal at all in a variety of fields, Jim, how you view how we are now. And do you think we're going to see a similar kind of situation where people who have lost relatives and friends under tragic circumstances are going to look for the answers that normal situations and the normal won't give them?
A lot of people are coming to psychic mediums, psychics, healers, to find out if their loved ones who have passed have gone into what we call the light, or that they're safe, that they're calm and they're relaxed and that they're okay. And I can tell you that I do this every day, is releasing spirits by sometimes up to 20 a day that I can see just on walking my dog, that we are beacons to the dead to release them into the light, because they don't even know that they've passed on. They are frightened souls, just like what people went through in the war. If a mortar went off, you were dead. You were crushed internally and you didn't know that you were still dead. And your spirit stayed in that spot. And there are so many spirits that are going through loops. It is unbelievable. I can walk by some of the major hospitals here in Ontario, and you can just see the energy in there is just horrific because there's no closure. They went in with a bad cold. They thought they were going to get better, and then they died. And that's all they knew. They never got to see their loved ones. There was no closure. So these spirits are very angry and wondering why this happened to them, or is that why their soul's purpose happened to them? A lot of dead spirits are suffering emotionally because of COVID. Mm. And it happened in the First and Second War the same way. And the release of so many spirits by good psychic mediums to let them go, to make sure that you're going to be okay. And we do it silently. We don't look for a pat on the back, but we are able to send so many spirits to the light. That is our job. That is why we are here, Paul, in my humble opinion. We're not out here to make a mega buck, because I'm not in here to make a mega buck. I'm out here to see a spirit go into the light. And trust me, and I tell this on every episode or every podcast, you're not getting a pat on the back from the spirit that you're sending to the light once they recognize the light. They see the light, they jump for it. There's no turning their head back in again and going, oh, thank you for that, and then move on. They don't do that. They just go, then they're gone. And you can feel the release and the calmness of that energy. I know this is a long explanation, but that's how my world, that's how I see it. And I've explained to people in the America, in North America, I can't go anywhere within a mile of the Twin Towers still. I cannot. The energy there is horrific. 2,900 people. I can't go.
I think it is a strange situation that we find when we're dealing with this as well, because often when we have situations like this, Jim, there is a reason, you know, people will be with their loved ones when they pass. And this is the other aspect, I think, that's adding to the stress. And perhaps you could class it as survivor's guilt as well, Jim, that a lot of people haven't been able to say goodbye in person because they've been barred from visiting their loved ones in hospital. That, you know, they may have had the privilege of at least getting a chance to speak to them on video call or something like that. But for thousands and thousands of people, that person went into hospital and they've never seen them again, and that's it. And I would imagine it's not just working on that realm for the departed. You're also dealing with who's remaining.
Exactly. And you have to understand, you watch the healthcare system and you watch our healthcare providers. Don't think for 30 seconds that a spirit does not cling to their last known person that they saw in front of them or held onto their hands, that they hang on to their energy because they are so afraid. And I know a lot of frontline nurses. I do. And I feel bad for them. And they're in survival mode. And part of the reason is because of the amount of spiritual energy clinging to their own energy that they can't release. Mm. So when I'm sitting there talking to them, I'm also working on saying, you know, Mr. Hill, please leave this woman alone. She helped you pass on. You passed on. You need to go to the light. And sometimes I have to say it out loud to the health professional that I'm with. And it's the health professional that breaks down and cries. And they'll say, Mr. Hill, he died just 3 weeks ago from COVID. And I'm going, I'm sorry. He's just clinging to you. They have a lot of that happening too, that people don't see what we see from the spiritual side.
Hmm. I think it is interesting as well, as you touched on there, Jim, in regards to the sight of the Twin Towers. I had a very similar experience myself several years ago. I went on a tour of Scotland, which is a beautiful country. And it was also the hottest period in Scottish history. So I timed it perfectly. So we had 2 weeks of beautiful sunshine on a tour of Scotland's most famous locations. Though strangely, I never made it to Edinburgh, but I went everywhere else in Scotland, it seemed.
Crazy.
And one of the strangest things that happened to me in my life is it's not often I get this kind of situation or this kind of feeling, despite the fact I grew up in a haunted house and my grandmother, very similar to what you were saying about your family, where people would come for readings and I'd be ushered out of the room, Jim, despite not knowing what was going on and why these people were visiting my gran. When I went to Glencoe, we were supposed to stay there for 2 days. And, you know, I love haunted locations. I'm not someone that's afraid of the supernatural. I'm deeply inquisitive. I find it extremely challenging. And I look for answers. And I'm very kind of thoughtful when I come across situations and cases. Glencoe was the first time I'd ever been somewhere where I just felt so deeply uncomfortable. I couldn't tell you why. I didn't feel upset. I didn't feel ill. I just felt like I couldn't stay there anymore. I know my history, so I'm fully aware of what happened there and the tragic circumstances. Yes. So it's the first time I'd ever encountered that kind of sort of atmosphere. It was like there was a fog of malignant depression there, Jim, that just,
there's no other
reason,
way to say it.
Yeah. It enveloped me. My partner was absolutely fine. There were, you know, hundreds of people there all having a great time. I was so befuddled by how it had made me feel. I didn't sleep a wink at all. I just could not settle. And instead of staying, we basically cancelled the second night booking and went somewhere else because I simply couldn't stay there.
But Paul, you understand that you're empathic.
Mm.
In your investigations, and being an empath, the spirit world, who's lost, you are a beacon to them. You're like that little buoy in the water that the boats know not to go near or to stay in the channel. And they're seeing you as a way out, or why am I still here? You can help me, and you can get rid of this horror that they're in. And they don't want you to feel what they're feeling, but they're giving it to you, the anguish, the upsetness, the inability to sleep, because they haven't slept in peace since their death.
Mm.
So they are just, that is a truly, that area that you're speaking about, the lost souls that are there are phenomenal. It's horrible.
Mm. Yeah. It was peculiar because I'd made a point of, we stopped in 8 different locations during this 2-week period, Jim. Only one of them wasn't known as a haunted location. I even went to Bolskin House on the banks of Loch Ness.
Oh, did you? And I've read about that. Oh, yeah, my God.
Sneaked a peek, got to have a look at that. And just to take it in, you know, went on Loch Ness. And unfortunately, Nessie didn't appear. But you can't have everything on a holiday that you try.
That miserable Ness.
But everywhere else we stopped, I didn't have any unwanted feelings or anything. Like I say, every other location we stopped at, with the exception of one, was known to be haunted. That was the only place, and we weren't even on the battleground or anything. We were adjacent to it, and yet that was the one that left me the most uncomfortable. It was very odd.
Crazy. And I'm just wondering if that could be a past life for you too, Paul, and do a regression on that. Find someone that can help you and do a regression, because the sense that I'm getting is that there's familiarity to it somewhere in your psyche or somewhere in your energy. And that's what me as a psychic will do, is try and read the energy that's around someone. You're speaking of this, and I'm feeling like you were a part of it.
It was very odd, like I say. And ever, you know, throughout my life, I've been places, and I'm one of those people where friends will say, how do you think this feels? How, you know, what's it like here? And I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah, no, it's okay. It's all right. You know, and I don't claim to have any kind of abilities, other than occasionally I get a funny feeling sometimes, and that's about the size of it, Jim. But I'm often struck when we, especially here in the UK, you know, you can't walk very far without sort of stumbling across a battleground from some period of history.
It is so weird down there. Yep.
When it comes to Canada, I think it's quite unusual that there doesn't seem to be any kind of famous locations, because obviously you can go, it's the same in America. You can go to hundreds of sites where famous battles have gone on.
Gettysburg and all of these different things. Yes.
Be it, you know, the reclamation of the lands from the Native American population, the battle for independence, the American Civil War. You know, there are certain areas of the US that are sadly bloodstained to this day, whether we see it or not. When you come to Canada, I think it's one of those countries that seems to be on the surface, Jim. It seems to be pretty clear of that kind of thing. But I suspect there are certain places like that. So obviously in your sort of investigations and things like that, is that a similar kind of situation that you've stumbled across in Canada at all?
It was when I started out with Knock Knock Ghost, and we were doing the history on eastern side of Canada. We went to a lot of forts that had a lot of history. And again, you know, war does that to us, right? And so we're going to feel energy from there. But I've been to a place right in Toronto downtown called the St. Lawrence Market, where Sir John A. Macdonald was there, and people were doing the elections, and there were hangings there. And our history books, they have it, but we don't glorify it or talk about it. There are haunted fire halls in Toronto. In the rural parts of Toronto, many farms are haunted for other farmers poisoning other farmers to get their land and to offer them a drink and murdering 19 people. Like, there's a lot of different places here that are horribly haunted, but we don't talk about it because we're embarrassed. That's the problem. We're embarrassed. And it would be good to bring that history out to get some closure in a lot of different places.
Do you think that's once again tied to the issues of the past, that for most people, like I say, through my love of the paranormal, I know of certain famous locations in Canada with a deeply held haunted history. And I suppose when you were doing the series of Knock Knock Ghosts, I think for a lot of people it was quite refreshing to see a Canadian paranormal show, Jim, because often they're either British or American, and occasionally you might get the odd one or two from Australia. But it, for me, as a lover of the paranormal and ghosts and the investigations that go on for these locations, I was delighted to be taken to places that I would probably have never heard of, or may just stumble across them when I was perhaps reading about the Amherst mystery or something like that.
Right, right. I enjoyed the show. I mean, we were doing a history. They did a history ahead of the place. And I'm being honest, 7 or 8 of these places I never knew anything about. And it was great to go into places unknown or unbeknownst to me, beating the spirits down there going, holy crap, there's a lot of dead here, you know? And they're active, and they want to be seen. It's almost going like, where have you been all my life? And you show up and they're giving you stories and they're telling me different things. And they're my team at the time was corresponding with what I was saying, adding it to the history records and confirming this. And it wasn't so much that I was happy about the affirmations. It was great that we were actually speaking to the dead that are still there from the 18th century, early 19th century, through the jails, through all of these things that some of them were horrific. And to let some of these spirits go was my favorite thing. I'm saying, hey, it's been a couple of hundred years. Do you think you want to move on and maybe come back a different person? And they're going, what? We can do that? Let's do this. And it's kind of fun. But there is a lot of horrific shit here in Canada that people haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. Montreal is known for a lot of haunted places, more jails and different. We were a place of underground murders and mafia and so many different things that happened. The FLQ crisis, that a lot of people died needlessly by the hands of others. And those places are haunted like crazy. Streets are haunted.
Mm.
It's insane.
I mean, when you were doing the show, what was the most surprising location that you were taken to, Jim? Because as you say, I think one of the other great aspects of sometimes with shows like this is that you get a historical background that, as you refer to, a lot of these places you weren't aware of, or perhaps their reputations that may surprise people. But also, I suspect for other people, that's very refreshing, because often there is this kind of criticism that when shows like this go, they go to places that anybody knows is haunted. You know, you could take most people who know about the paranormal to Gettysburg, Jim. They're going to expect to see soldiers.
They're going to hear a gun and they're going to hear a cannon. And yes, and a majority of the time, the good ones, you'll get to hear that. The one that excited me the most, and I was expecting one thing and it ended up being another, was the London, Ontario psychiatric ward.
Mm.
The reason is I was expecting to see the spirit world that was damaged by at the time, people who had mental capacities were murderers, and they were locked up in these prisons where I was going through. And a majority of them had moved on into the light, Paul, which was freaking me, because I'm going, isn't there anybody bad in here? Like, come on out. I want to talk to you, you know? And very, maybe one or two might have shown up just to piss me off. But I ended up seeing the employees, the ex-engineers that worked there, the nurses, the doctors. They're the ones who went back there. They're the ones who enjoyed that whole area and giving me stories. And the curator there, Stan, he was flabbergasted by the names that I was giving out. And oh, yeah, they worked here and they did this and they retired and then they died 2 years later. And you're telling me that they're here right now, because he works there alone. Mm-hmm. And I said, yep, they're still here. And it was, as an example, one of his close engineering friends, I was walking through a walkthrough before the show had started. And I said, one of your buddies here is telling me that a water pump is about to burst because the bearings are going. I'm not an engineering pro on this. I don't know what I'm talking about. And this guy, Stan, said, I've done my walk around and there's absolutely nothing here. And I'm going, okay, but I'm just giving you this message. And he said, who was the guy who gave you the message? I said, Mike. He says, and he stopped and he said to me, Mike would always bug me to go for a smoke near this pump house. And we would go and smoke where it was illegal to smoke. And it was where this pump was, and this pump shaft, the bearings were gone and it started leaking on the floor. And him and I and my film crew went and it showed them. We never put it on the air, which I never still to this day don't understand. But holy cow, that to me was one of the most amazing places to be in. It's simple. It's people that have worked in an institution their whole lives, and they're the ones who come back because that's familiar and they're happy. And they've gone into the light. They don't want to come back into being somebody else or changing their soul's perspective and being and learning another soul's purpose. They just wanted to stay in that facility and just go through their emotions of what they used to do. They stayed in their past. It was so cool for me.
Yeah.
That was one of them. I know it doesn't sound like super exciting, but it was kind of cool to see ex-employees there.
Yeah, I suppose there is that, because I think when you look at Eastern Canada – Montreal is probably the most haunted city that on that side, or it certainly seems to me that it's the city that seems to be more open about its hauntings when you compare it to, say, Quebec, in regards to when you talk about hauntings in Eastern Canada, Montreal mm-hmm. seems to be more well known. I mean, the one I'm thinking of is probably the Grey Nun's Mother House, is it?
Oh, yes, Grey Nun's Mother House. That in particular, you can walk within 2 miles of going there. And you will get such for me, I got a feeling of being stuck in a vice or in a straitjacket. Mm. And it was warning me, come here, we'll hurt you. And of course I went. and I was sick for probably 7 to 8 days afterwards.
Mm.
Sick. And doctor didn't know it was wrong. Stomach issues. My teeth hurt of yeah. all things.
Yeah.
And I had blurriness in my right eye from that place. That's how horrible that place was.
Yeah. I mean, when you go on this kind of thing, and this was something I was going to ask you about as well, especially with your experience and the length of time that you've worked in this field, Jim, and I don't mean that disrespectfully, that's not an ageist comment, my friend. Essentially, I'm always interested as well, like I say, as someone that's read about the history of hauntings and ghosts and things, I'm surprised these days, because growing up, I would read book after book after book about hauntings, and most ghosts seem to be quite, occasionally they just spook people by appearing where they shouldn't appear, and they'd wander about going, ooh, or, you know, mm-hmm. or they'd walk through a wall. And I've noticed the last 20 years, everything seems to have become a demon in certain places.
And I'm
wondering, do you understand why there's this kind of addiction to the darker side of the paranormal? When you look at the body of evidence, if we look at everything, most hauntings are quite steady, aren't they? They're just, you know, they're just a ghost wanders about, or occasionally it's haunted footsteps. And you can't seem to come across a modern paranormal investigation without it suddenly falling into some kind of realms of darkness all the time. And for me, I find that really odd that we've got this whole new body of work that seems to have supplanted everything. The whole history of the paranormal prior to the turn of the millennium seems to be quite ambivalent. They were all just floating about scaring people, and that was it.
So, Paul, now, once I explain this and once this goes to air, I'm going to get a lot of hate mail. Thank you for this one, okay? Thank you. Oh, my gosh. Now, I am going to explain this as best as I can without insulting the paranormal investigator. But the paranormal investigator goes in with the idea that they are calling in on the dark, and I don't know where it started from. But in the 90s, if you were going and saying that Grandpa Kozlak is sitting there and he's having his cigar in the green chair that he used to smoke in, and you can smell the scent of a cigar, he's only there to say hi and just to check up on the family to make sure that we're still okay.
Mm.
But then you'll get a paranormal investigator going in there. Well, I saw your grandfather, but he's being held hostage and he doesn't have a sausage and he's not cooking and he's not being seen. He's not allowed to see his family because there's a dark ghost that's there. A paranormal investigator who likes the dark invites the dark. You will get the dark.
Mm.
That's what has happened. And now it's just like releasing the demonic out here to give them permission to scare us, to possess us, to control us, because we are of our own free will and mind. And so when an investigator is going in to sensationalize something, that demon never belonged there, or that demon was there who committed suicide, doesn't want to be bothered because that was their soul's purpose.
Mm.
And why are you disturbing that person that committed suicide? And you want that energy around you? You want that to hold on to you and control you? There have been so many horrible, horrible people asking for the dark, using a Ouija board where it doesn't belong. You have the people that will prey on the demons just like you would have me prey on the good.
Mm.
And I'm only calling out the good, and I do get the evil out there, but the evil don't last long with me because I warn them. You hurt me, you hurt any of my staff, you hurt anyone, and I will come back and I will look for you and you will never be able to do this again. I have absolutely no fear of the dark. I don't care about them. They don't deserve 30 seconds of my time. If they're in there when we're filming, they are gone just as quick as they come, they show up. I've been in a Masonic temple where I had this evil owner from years because he didn't like the fact that he was dead and all the things were changing in this temple, but he blamed me for it. And I'm going, go F yourself, buddy. You have no right to do this to me. And I am releasing the souls that used to live here because you're holding them under a contract because you frightened them. The dark energy has such an evil presence of control and manipulation. It is unbelievable what they can do to the human race, let alone the spiritual race. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they've always been there, but as you refer to there, Jim, they've lacked the invitation to appear, or they've kind of slunked about in the shadows, ashamed of themselves, ashamed of their actions that's created their afterlife and their position that they hold in it? And it's only that when they're invited out that they feel brave enough to come forward, because essentially they're cowards.
Can I steal that whole explanation from you and just put it in my book? Because that's exactly how I want to represent it. But that is the truth. The dark energy are ashamed of what they did on this earth and what they've done to us. And you call them out on it, they're going to go, oh, you want to know more? This is what I can do now. I can even do worse to you because I'm dead and there's very few limitations. When you get attacked and you feel, I have been punched so hard in the chest with a mark on my chest for months from a poltergeist. I never asked for that, but he was very mad that I was in his presence and telling him to go away, but he thought he was in charge. Now, I paid for that, but I warned him and I went back on my own with a small crew who weren't afraid of us either, and I got rid of that son of a bitch, and he never showed up in that house ever again. It was an old farmhouse that somebody was poisoned in.
Mm. Is it often that, I suppose, Jim, when you come to a location or you're invited to help or assist someone in a situation like that, what kind of preparation would you take to be prepared for such an eventuality that you may come across such an entity as this? Because often, as we touched on, I'm certainly not trying to be flippant about it. Most ghosts are quite matter of fact. They like you say, they like to come back, check on the family, walk about, sit in their favourite chair. Some people like to, do what they used to do. Ghosts chattering away or sitting outside, singing, or smoking a cigar or whatever. So I suppose for somebody looking at it on the outside, how would you prepare for that? Is it something that you always have to be ready for, in case something's lurking about in the shadows, or do you just kind of go in there and if something turns up, then you deal with it based on your experience?
What I've learned is we get different feels of energy when we walk into an establishment, a home, a piece of land. I can step off from one side of a little creek where it's horrible feelings of energy and despair, and then walk on the other one and it's all lily blossoms and cotton candy. And I'm always going, what is on the darker side? Because now you have me curious. And why are you feeling or making me feel this way? And usually what is lucky for a lot of us, and this is where it pisses off the demonologists and everyone around us saying, oh, you're just going to talk to them and they're going to leave you alone. No, they don't do that because they want to prove a point, and they do want to hurt you and they do want to control you. But when you go in there and you don't allow them and just say, hey, you've done your madness. You did it when you were alive. You did it when you're dead. None of us really care. And you're going to continue doing this. Why don't you move into the light, face your demons yourself, no pun intended, and move on to a different soul life, because they are living in their hell. But if you go to the light, your soul's command will change. Your whole destiny will change. A new soul life will begin. You're not going to come back a serial killer twice, you know?
I suppose as well, Jim, when you're working on, say, Not Ghost and other shows such as that, is it something that you've got to prepare the staff and the crew for as well? Because often I would imagine, with the greatest respect, you will be dealing with people or working alongside people who think this is all nonsense. And they'll just say, oh, there's no, you know, there's no ghosts here. It's just a, it's an old house that's creaking. It's seismic activity. It's the wind, Jim.
And Paul, it starts out that way with a lot of people in my crew. Now you're making me laugh. I love it. But I had a cameraman who was exactly like that. This is BS. This is not true. Blah, blah, blah. And he was my famed cameraman. He was the one following me, front, back, and indifferent. Him and I were stuck in a room at this famous psychiatric ward. And I saw a spirit around him. I'm not saying anything because I want him to have that experience. He had his hair pulled while he was filming me. And he looked around him because you can see him losing the gimbal, turning around, looking at a door where the camera shouldn't be. And he just said, for F's sakes, Jim, my hair has just been pulled. He says, we need to get out of here now. And I said, no, 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 it's okay. You're all right. You're going to be good. He's not a bad spirit. He was just trying to see how come you have long hair and a man in his era should not have long hair.
Yeah.
He thought that you were a girl. He laughed and said, blah, 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 blah to me. And then he had more experiences as time went on, but not as so panicked as he was.
Yeah.
But yes, a lot of people will go in there with that. And not everyone will feel it. And I not every psychic will feel something either in a room.
Mm.
But at the same time, a majority of you will. You'll feel that experience. You'll understand what's next. And you're not going to be afraid to move forward.
Mm. I suppose it's as difficult as well, Jim, when you come to a situation and as soon as you get there, you can't feel anything at all. And you're like, well, what's supposed to be going on here? I mean, have you ever come across that kind of situation where you've had reports and people have been absolutely adamant that their house is haunted and you go there and there's nothing at all?
That's, again, I've been going into places like that and they said, this guy's a psychic? What is this guy? Like, where did you find him? That's what happens. And I'm just going, hang on a second here. You have energy, but it's good energy and they're not coming out to play. They're here to protect you. They have no reason to talk to me. And unless you have something that is dangerous or it's upsetting you, then they're either going in hiding and we should smoke or smudge the place because now we're not allowed to use the term smudge in North America. It's insulting to the Aboriginal people. And I'm partially Native, so I'm sorry about people to that. But we now should use the word properly, smoke. So if we smoke them out, literally, and say our whatever we want to say to release these spirits from our home, that's the way to do it. And then they won't come back. And probably 90% of the time, that energy in that home is gone. And if it comes back, then I really did a poor job and I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm always interested, like you say, about the incident with the cameraman. I often think that obviously if we're dealing with paranormal forces that have some kind of sentience and are aware of what's going on for whatever reason, Jim, I'm always really interested where we have encounters where people see ghosts who look as surprised to see them as they are to see the ghost. And it's almost as if like there's a mutual, like, hang on a minute, who the hell's that? Who are you in my house? Have you come across those kinds of situations? Because they're sometimes some of my favorite ghostly encounters, because often I like the ones where the ghost seems to be as surprised as the person that sees it.
I've seen, but they've never had a conversation with me to say, what the hell am I doing here? Or what the hell are you doing here type thing. I've never had that encounter. They've looked at me and vanished quite quickly because they're either afraid of me or I'm afraid of them for a certain second or so. But the only thing that I might see, I cannot say that I've actually come across that very often in my 52 years of doing this.
Mm.
That's insane when you make me think about that.
I mean, for you, Jim, there are obviously lots of places that you've been to. Would there be a couple of locations that you've yet to have the opportunity to to investigate or spend some time in that you've basically got on your paranormal hit list that you'd like to go and spend some time and see what you can find?
The Kingston Penitentiary here in Kingston, Ontario. It was emptied almost 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a tourist attraction, but they have not allowed one paranormal TV show or paranormal people in legally to go in there and check the grounds out, the prison or whatever. They just, again, this is where you and I talked about earlier. They don't want us to know the history because it was so horrible. They don't want us to pull out the evil in case it turns alive again, I think, in their heads, because that was a horrific place, a horrible prison filled with so many people that were incarcerated there that were dangerous, that shouldn't have been in there. Just the lowest of life who were alive that never should have been there. The sociopath, the psychopath, the serial killers that we had in there. And when I went in there through a tour, talk about being in a vice and feeling like I'm being choked out, or feeling like I'm going to get you, I'm going to get you in the back of your mind, and they're breathing on you as you're walking, and to kill your battery and your phones, and everybody's walking going, oh, my phone is dead, and I'm looking going, yeah, because they're taking that energy from you to use against you later on that day. And I went there and I met the actual warden of the prison when it was opened. And he said, you are the only one who didn't ask any questions, and you stayed behind the crowd all the time because we were watching you on camera. And I'm going, I'm a psychic medium. I'm here with my friends to visit. I never was going to say anything. And he says, thank you for not saying anything. And he said, what was the worst wing that you felt? And I said, the tower. And he said, the tower. And he said, oh, yes, that's where a prisoner went and murdered two other people there in the tower, which was hidden from the public, and it was never released.
Mm.
So I want to go there. But hi, Kingston, Ontario, the mayor of Kingston, who I've sent many mails to, and to the politicians. She still won't let me go in. Sorry.
Yeah, that is very odd. I mean, obviously, those kind of places, I think often when you get the opportunity, when it's a penitentiary or a prison, Jim, mm-hmm. for a lot of us, it is something that I've really been interested in. I spoke to a British paranormal researcher over here, Ruth Roper Wild, and in her latest book, she had a couple of stories from a prison that's currently open. And I've often found that kind of aspect, because obviously that's a location that none of us can really visit, you know, an open prison. Whereas the majority of prisons that we would visit are ones that have been closed down or repurposed as, you know, into museums or tourist attractions in such a way. So I'm interested in those kinds of aspects of reality and society that we're still barred from for obvious safety reasons. And I think that's a real untapped aspect of it, because if you think of the people that are in there and the history of some of these places, I think these are real pools of energy for a variety of entities. Is that something that, as someone with your experience and your knowledge in this subject, do you think that's something that down the line is something that we can expect to hear more of as perhaps society opens up a bit more and people become a bit more forward in regards to things like that?
Paul, I would love the opportunity to go and walk into a live prison and walk the halls safely and see the spirit world of what's in there. Hmm. And I can use that explanation by saying, go into a hospital.
Yeah.
It's the same energy. The living are living and being and surviving, and the dead who die surprisingly are there in a catastrophic situation of energy, who can't get out and wander these halls. And the dead in prisons are doing the same thing that are live, that are still active. There's a prison in Stratford, Ontario, that my mother-in-law worked near in the courthouse. And the courthouse is so haunted, let alone the prison that's behind it. And I would love to walk that prison, but it's an active prison, so they won't let you in. But it is so crazy down there. And the sightings that people have of prisoners looking through the windows of the courthouse going, there's nobody there. And there's no footsteps in the snow. I would love to do something like that. That would be, oh my gosh. Let's go, Paul, you and I. Let's grab Ruth and take her with us.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think it's one of those aspects that I think sometimes we just presume places, it's just domestic settings. And I think when you start to look at the history of the paranormal around the world, Jim, places like that, I think, can only be hot pots for paranormal mm-hmm. activity because of the emotional history of the buildings.
And what I would get out of that is a lot of information that would be very important to others whose family members have passed away in a prison, that you can give them some information and the prisoner doesn't feel like they can leave that stronghold because they're controlled there, again, by the darker forces, the darker energy that are within those prison walls that control that spirit, that don't allow them to go to the light, because they usually will tell them, you go to that light, you'll never be able to return back here again, and you're going to go into a bigger hell. I think that that's how they manipulate the good souls that want to change and leave the prison because they were drunk and disorderly and died in that prison for whatever reason. And they're stuck in there from a mass murderer who died in there and controlling that spirit. It's there every day. We have it in our everyday lives where people try and control us.
Is there a location that you visited that you're surprised more people don't know about, or a haunting that you think deserves more recognition, Jim? Because I'm often surprised in this day and age that sometimes certain famous cases seem to be continually put forward, whether it's in Canada or, you know, if you talk to people, name a Canadian poltergeist case, they'll mention Amherst. That's it. Anything after that, they don't seem to know much about. And you know, there, in America, there are a handful of cases that constantly seem to be, you know, everybody wants to go to the Lizzie Borden house and others of that ilk. And it's the same here in England.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still surprised with all your experience that these same old cases keep going through the motions when you look at it, there are some fabulous cases that just seem to have just never caught attention for whatever reason.
There is an orphanage in Montreal. It's on Côte-de-Liesse Boulevard. And this was an orphanage that turned into a nunnery, that turned into an abandoned facility in the late 80s and refurbished into office buildings that is one of the most haunted places in North America. And it's not talked about because people are afraid to talk about what they're feeling and seeing, thinking that they were crazy. I would love to go in there and release the spirit of the first three floors there, because a lot of children were buried amongst the grounds that were not just Aboriginal, but were white children and of different races, of different backgrounds, that were in that orphanage that were murdered and beaten and hidden amongst the grounds there. It is, you can walk into there and you can feel the energy, Paul, just like what you felt in Scotland. And it is horrible to go in there. And people go about their business. They know that it's uncomfortable. They don't like it. But I would like to go and investigate that place more, because there's a lot of hidden history in there that they're not talking about. It's written, but no one's pulling out the archives to show how many people actually died from that orphanage. And they're in the hundreds.
Yeah. Do you think that's, once again, going back to this Canadian embarrassment about certain aspects of its history, that it just doesn't want to open them up to modernize, Jim, because they're embarrassed about what went on? And it's not just Canada. I know there's obviously been very notable cases over there recently of some very tragic discoveries, but
horrible.
You know, there are similar things that have happened in Ireland and Australia and the UK. So, you know, Canada's not alone in, unfortunately, having that darker side to its what should have been a nurturing environment, sadly.
But remember, we're the country that says thank you for killing us, right? So, like, we really mums the word here, because we are embarrassed about some of our history, no matter how we look at it. And I've been trying to literally rebroadcast some of the places to let us in. Like, I'll never be able to put enough pressure on Kingston Penn to get in there to release the souls, because they don't want that history removed. They want it hidden. We're not going to get there, not in my lifetime anyway. I don't know if anybody else, but the more good intuitives that are coming out now, children that were born in the 2000s, I think are more intuitive, not because of the electronics, but because they are able to be more stable in seeing things differently, and they grow up faster. Their intuitiveness is phenomenal to me. More kids in the 2000s than any. And I think they're going to bring a lot of peace to a lot of us down the road.
Yeah, very much so. It certainly seems that children are a lot more worldly wise and a bit more switched on than perhaps we are. And maybe that's because they're not prepared to accept the standard fare that we were all fed as kids growing up, Jim.
Agreed. 100%. And I'm looking forward to, hopefully in retirement, if I ever do retire, watch this.
For you then, Jim, is there an investigation or a location that you've been to where it's been an overwhelmingly positive experience for either for what you've encountered or the people that you've helped find peace, either alive or passed on?
How do we say this without insulting people? A retirement home. And releasing probably 60 different elders in a dining room and in a living room that just sat there with the rest of the elders in the dining room, listening to music and eating amongst the living and releasing those souls so that they can move on and come back and do something different, and do that secretly while I'm sitting there watching another older elder being prepared to pass on, and watching all the other spirits surround an elder who with Alzheimer's to make sure that whenever they're in and out of a state that they have someone around them, that they're not alone, and our families who worry about them, they're surrounded so much by these spirits to protect them. There is no darkness in an elder's home. There is none. And I would love to do a show there just to show people the lights, and the shadow people that are there are not demonic, but helpful and protective and loved.
Is it often the case that people are not unwilling to cross over because they don't want to cross over, Jim, but they don't know how to, or they're very happy being surrounded by, you know, in that kind of situation, I would imagine dear friends that they've known for a long time. And for some people, I suppose it's all they've known, because they may have ended up in a situation where they don't have any family outside of that kind of environment.
You know, Paul, I was sitting in, I'm going to use this environment again. There was an elder woman who was lying in a bed in a state of preparation, and her hand kept on going up above her chest in a petting motion. And I rarely see animal spirits, and I'm protected by an animal spirit, which is really weird. But this cat was on this woman's sort of belly and chest, and she was petting this cat that was dead in spirit, and that was comforting her. These are kind of cool things that I want to be able to give to people and family members for closure. And I desperately wanted to go tell the daughter that she is petting a cat right now, and she's preparing to move into the light, and she just wants to pet this cat one more time because she's so surprised that the cat is there. You know? So, and then all of a sudden you can see another full apparition of her husband or a brother or a father showing up. It was a father. It was a male figure. And she just, you know, you can see her turning and just nodding her whole head, like her whole body moving towards that spirit, and then just commonly sitting back down again. And I just walked by the door to let go, but then I would come back and take a look at her again, and this woman would do a complete 180 of her head and take a look at me and look at me, where she was always paying attention to the cat or her daughter or looking into space. It was very cool.
Mm.
Those are the things that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, I'm always I have a great weak spot for animal spirits, Jim, because I think it's one of the aspects of the paranormal that we don't seem to talk about much these days. And I think often,
love them.
I think for some people, it's usually the environment that they may come across this, because unless you have a situation where you're not expecting an animal, most people would be quite blasé about it. I've often spoke about this because a friend of mine once had a flat, and he kept having a cat appear in his flat, and he no idea how this cat was getting into his flat.
Huh.
And it was only when he eventually spoke with his neighbours that he realised it was his neighbour's former cat, and that it had passed away a couple of years previously, but the person that used to live in the flat beforehand would always feed it. So it would always find a way into his flat. And even in the afterlife, it was still coming back because it was expecting its treats.
Which is beautiful. And it happens all the time. The animal lovers who are so empathic towards the animal species of any kind, just doesn't have to be a cat or a dog. It could be a horse. It could be, you know, a turtle, for God's sakes. It's the love that they have for these animals. Animals respect the dead. Animals see the dead constantly, and they're always watching out. We have a new puppy here that we're learning to get along with. And I watch this dog look over my daughter's shoulder because the dog is seeing something else other than just my daughter.
Mm.
So it's always neat to see that they're seeing things, and they know that it's not malicious. The intent is there, and usually it's an elder behind someone, especially a child, to give us the grace of knowledge, to say, you know, even though your mummy said no, don't do it, do it anyway, but don't tell her.
Have you ever come across a situation where, as you're referring to there, you've got a new puppy in the house, that an elder animal spirit has come back to teach the new kid how to behave or how to carry on?
Absolutely. I think that's where we don't give them the respect. And that's, again, where I'm going to get the hate mail, where we'll have paranormal investigators going in with the expectation of looking for the darkest energy around there. If you would just go into a facility, a home, a business, and go in with the intent of looking for the good, the negative and dark energy will walk away. You will get more activity from an elder spirit or someone else, because they are in tune to good and happiness, and you will always see good activity from them.
Mm.
You won't see the spikes of an EMF meter coming off because the poltergeist is ready to wring your neck or throw you off a balcony.
Mm.
You're going to get the EMF reading of positive energy because they're there to shroud you with love and admiration that they probably didn't give to their own kids. But they're going to give it to you because you're coming into the house with the intent of getting rid of the dark energy, not getting rid of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I've often found that quite interesting as well, because I think some people get very attached to their spirits, especially if it's a positive one, or as we refer to, one that wanders about and perhaps just shakes a few glasses here and there, Jim, or sits in its favorite chair. I'm often intrigued as to this is the other aspect of it as well, and I suppose you've dealt with this. Have you dealt with situations where people didn't want their spirit to be removed, or they were very happy with it, they just wanted to understand more about who or what it was?
This is the thing, Paul. This is where I've been called upon by so many people, and this is internationally. People want to fly me to the UK or to China or to many of the states in New York to say, my grandmother is still here. I feel her presence. She is more than welcome, but I'm feeling like she's not happy with something that I'm doing. Could you come over here and help us figure this out? Mm. And I've been doing more of those investigations than the investigations of the a brewery that's opening up and all their beer went skunky because the dark energy just wants to destroy their business. They're in there for a reason, but I'm in there more to give an explanation as to why they're hanging around us. I recently I was a little bit down on myself at Christmas not supplying and losing a close friend who's alive and just losing their friendship. And that's upsetting after having a friend for such a long period of time.
Mm.
And I smelt this cigarette smoke and I'm going, shit, that's my dad.
Mm.
And my father said, you know, it's not there. It wasn't your time is the energy that I was getting. It's not, they were in a different place. You're in a different place. Just let it be and move on because they've already moved on and you need to take your energy and put it in a better place.
Mm.
Once I got that explanation or feeling from the spirit world, and that happened to me just on Christmas Eve.
Mm.
Wow. What a feeling. Thank you very much, Norm, because my father's name is Norm. Off I went. And I enjoyed the rest of my Christmas Eve and Christmas Day because I was given food for thought from an elder that was helping me go through something that was very emotional to me.
Mm.
And it was great to have that feeling. And that happens to everybody here. And it'll happen to you, Paul. It'll happen to my wife. It'll happen to my daughter. And those spirits are here to protect us, not to always hurt us the way that people are looking at it in today's day and age.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. We need to kind of reconnect with that kind of aspect of it, that in the majority of cases, these situations are there for guidance and support and protection, not for malicious intent.
The end of World War II was what, 1947, 1948? I don't really know my history that much.
45.
In that 45, okay. And then everything that came out. Do you know that when I've been in the UK, that I can still see the spirits who have left the battlegrounds to come home looking for their loved ones that they can't find anymore. Mm. And I'm just saying they've left as well. You might as well go to the light and you'll find them there. And they'll just wander off and move in there. And I've seen them in your tunnels. I've seen them in their pubs. I've seen them everywhere. I've seen them especially along, it's a container facility. And a lot of people were coming from there and they were from that era, the Second World War. I'm just saying, your loved ones have left you. It's time to move on. But they're saying, I don't want to go. Is there anybody here that I can help?
Mm.
That's what I get as an answer half the time. Yeah. I don't want to go. I don't want to go to the light. Is there someone here that needs my help?
Mm.
They're so courageous.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for you, Jim? What's on your itinerary? What have you got planned? Or is there anything that you're... Once, hopefully, we can all sort of get back out there into the real world fully. Is there anything you've got sort of planned or you're dying to get your teeth stuck into?
I am so looking forward to this next set of my career. As soon as we're in a safer environment with COVID, I'm going to be going to a lot of haunted public facilities.
Mm-hmm.
And where there's they could be pubs, they could be restaurants, and invite people who have lost their loved ones, who have been associated with certain restaurants or bars or facilities,
mm-hmm.
and go in and have everybody talk to them and give off information, history, let go of people, send them to the light and do that type of thing. I'm going to be doing more talks and help people in the audience to let go of loved ones that they feel like they're clinging to or that they haven't gotten closure from and get their answers as best as I can. I'm going to do the whole goodness here that we need in our today's world. And I'm just waiting for COVID to end. What I do in my sessions now in my sessions is most people are calling on me not to find out what their past, present, and future is, but a lot of people are calling me on my loved ones. I was stuck. I couldn't go to the hospital and meet my mom who passed away in time. And I'm going, say no more. Pauline is there and she says she loved you no matter what. She'd prefer not for you to have seen her in the state that she was in before she passed away. Now you have a good vision of who she is. Please hold that in your memory. And those are the things that I want to be able to do and do those live for people.
Mm.
We need that. We need better psychics out there that are not after the sensationalism of the dark. We need goodness in this earth now. We've had enough crap in our lives for the last few years. Let's bring some positive into our lives.
Absolutely. I think we all need to focus on what we need to do in a more proactive manner, Jim. I think after everything we've been through, and you know, some of us have lost more than we probably ever imagined we could possibly do so, that we need to focus on moving forwards in a positive manner and reconnecting with things and being able to let go without this fear and trepidation that seems to enable certain aspects of the paranormal.
And the paranormal is something that we shouldn't be afraid of, but embrace, because a lot more of the dead have messages for us that are positive and not negative. And that's my job now, is to bring out the positive. And that's my intent, is doing that until I'm ready to pass on and maybe pass the torch on to my daughter. Who knows? But it's very good for us to learn that there are many souls out there that are wandering. And even if we don't know them, we've got to give them permission to give them something to do for us. And if they're willing to want to help us, let them help us. They're not hindering us. They'll only make our lives that much more enriched.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, thank you so much for a deeply thought-provoking and pleasant conversation. It's been fabulous to get your views and your opinions on a variety of topics. Where can everybody keep up to date with you and follow your work, my friend?
Paul, thank you so much for this whole time. I've had a lot of podcast interviews in the last year, but yours was the most insightful and the questions were amazing. So I want to thank you ahead of time.
No, thank you.
You're spot on with everything. So cheers to you, my friend.
You're welcome.
The best way to reach out to me is through my website. It's jimhuntofficial.com. I'm on Instagram at jimhuntofficial, and I'm on Twitter at jimhuntofficial. And it's Intuitive Life Coach on Facebook, which I'm having a hard time trying to change it to Jim Hunt Official. But find me on all of those aspects. For all my lovely people across the pond, I will make exceptions if you email me and just say, our 5-hour difference, can you try and sort that out, that you can have a later date? I can work on something like that, because I have many people across the pond that always like to book with me. I love the idea. I have a lot of fun. There's about a 2 to 3 week waiting list, and I'm very sorry for that. It's not so much the popularity. It's just people hear about me and they're booking because I'm being honest with you. And just like you were with everybody else, Paul, thank you again.
No problems at all. And I will put links to everything in the show notes so everybody can find you afterwards, Jim. And once again, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure. And hopefully we'll get the opportunity to speak again in future.
Thank you. Take care, Paul.